This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we are with Carolyn Joyner, a Washington, D.C. poet who is known for writing traditional work and contemporary, and we're going to hear all about it today. So we're on virtual remote, and here's Carolyn coming to us with an opening poem.
The Now of Gwendolyn Brooks. Like a full moon in winter, her light comes inside, gives breath to voice speaking behind plain folk eyes, to song humming sway at their core. Long-limbed words with big souls, a collective embrace, armoring. There's no looking up or looking down on her charted journey, just the challenge of being human, assorting humanness. Soon I'll be done with the troubles of the world. We dance, stride, gallop the idiom, rhythmic riffs resonant in portraits of young men dangling hope by the foot. But they cool, real cool. The bourgeois raining condescension on the poor, that old yellow pair sharing broken dream devotion. She seats us in kitchenette buildings, gives us a whiff of hallways overripe in garbage after strutting our stuff down Bronzeville streets with Satin Leg Smith. We neighbor with a young girl named Annie Allen, grow into adulthood with her. Black urban poor skin slips on easily, reshapes truths that speak of our own, reach into modernity's chest, illuminate it like a full moon in winter.
Carolyn Joyner, we will not forget that in a hurry. That is gorgeous. I don't think I know that. Is it not printed?
It was published in a literary magazine anthology called Pleiades, and it's out of the University of Central Missouri.
Oh, yes, I do know that.
And I had the honor of not only being in the anthology, they did a tribute to Dolores Kendrick in that, and this poem was inspired by Dolores. So they put it in the anthology, and then they put it on the cover of the magazine, the back cover of the journal.
And she loved you, too. So
that was an honor.
I'm glad we gave it some fresh air today so everyone can hear it. And I really, really had never heard that one before. So Carolyn Joyner is with us. She has been published, as she said, in many magazines. But we do want everyone to know that you were one of the leaders in D.C. at the public library running their poetry workshops. And I want to hear all about that in a minute. But right now, give us two poems so that we know who you are. And then I want to talk about them.
These two are from the upcoming book, Bone Through Skin. The first one is called Sightings. Sightings. It's him again, threading his way through the festival crowd on the other side of the street, styling a purple crew neck with Muhammad Ali silk-screened in white across his chest. He stops mid-block to survey the scene, bobs his head to bass lines thump booming from stage four at street's end. I stand where he can see me, a mega-white grin, almost a laugh, anticipating the latest funny story. Wait for him to acknowledge the mother whose house he always stops by whenever he's this close. He starts to cross the street, walk toward me. Midway, he vanishes. Mm. 2 weeks ago, I spotted him driving down Georgia Avenue. Tried to flag him, but he stared past me without recognition. Didn't see the flailing arms, blue dress he gave me for my birthday flapping the breeze. At night, my longing takes shape, hangs over my bed, awakens me just enough to remind me that he's gone. I want him back. Mm. Box his things instead, give them away, put his authentic leather and woolen, quote, Redskins, unquote, jacket up for sale. He doesn't know I moved from the house he called home, left his footsteps echo on the stairs, his form peeling away from shadows, walking toward me.
Whoa.
Sightings.
So I think we're getting the theme of this new book. And what is the title?
It's called Bone Through Skin. It's kind of a metaphor for actually a compound fracture. I don't want to gross anyone out, but it's to correlate to that excruciating pain, and in this instance, the pain and devastation of losing a child.
Yes, and I think that is, in a way, as exquisitely painful as it is, it's a very beautiful title. It is not ugly. It is not ugly at all. Let us hear one more from this book.
Okay, 5 a.m. blues. Woke up at 5 this morning, didn't need no alarm. Eyes wide open at 5 a.m., didn't need no alarm. Happens on the 20th of every month, day my son went home. Can't get his final gasp out my troubled mind. Say that deep rattling gasp sits heavy on my mind. Still wonder why he had to go, leave me here behind. Think about the man he was I'll never see again. The man I knew as son I'll never see again. When I brought him into this world, never thought I'd see him transcend. Still yourself to quiet, they say somebody done called his name. They tell me to hush, somebody done called his name. I plead, what shall I do? Earth echoes my lone refrain. Woke up at 5 this morning, didn't need no alarm. Happens on the 20th of every month. Day my sweet baby went home. He died on the 20th of the month at 5:05 a.m. And interesting enough, for 13 months after that, I actually woke up in that time frame between 5 and 5:15 without an alarm, without thinking of it. I would just wake up and I would look at the clock and it would be that time.
But you know, Carolyn, he touched you.
Yeah, that was, and that happened every 20th of every month for 13 months.
Carolyn, you sing, you know, you do know you sing as you speak, and that bringing us along with the musicality of grief just makes that poem so rich, so really rich.
Oh,
5 a.m.
thank you.
In the morning. Now it will have a whole new meaning to us. It will.
Exactly, exactly.
Now, how could you write this book? I mean, when you were going through the trauma, were you able to make notes, or were you able to record it in your mind, or did it become indelible, or did you meditate into it? How did you keep the information so that it remained in your database when you were
exactly
out of your mind?
For the first almost 3 years, I really couldn't write about it. I mean, I wrote some things, but it felt forced, and I was really at a loss for words. And I was just reading the other day what an author said about that, and it really struck home with me. And it's because, you know, when you're at a loss for words, you have to search for what names them. And you have to, you know, you have to kind of explore what to find those feel. You have to name them, give those feelings words to find out really what it is you are feeling.
Wow.
What's beneath those words that you're looking for, you know. And, you know, I knew that I had to, it has been emotionally exhausting writing it, because you do have to relive the experience I'm addressing when you write it in order for it to be authentic. And I didn't take a whole lot of notes, but I recalled so many things that happened. And after, it took me about 7 years off and on to do this, and to do the finish the manuscript. And I did that. And I recall stories, one led to another, and I just started to pull it together. And
It's time for the world.
It does. It takes time. I had to let things percolate and just, as I say, search for the feelings beneath the words.
Yes, but you're now, time is now to give it to the world and to let everyone feel what you felt, because every one of us has had grief.
Exactly.
But you have put the most beautiful words to it. I want you to read us another poem.
Okay, this one's called Limbo. Today, I didn't cry about my son's dying. return 5-day-old phone calls, mail my 22 monthly bills, check my 1,546 email messages, dwindle them down. And today I didn't go to the Caribbean Carnival Parade, dance down 30 blocks of Georgia Avenue behind the mud truck with my 5 Trini friends, do the wine with the 10 gorgeous guys who always jump off the truck, get muddy. Today, I didn't make good on my promise to go to Sarah's clothes swap at 3314 Flower, drink 2 Bloody Marys with the girls, sort the stuff I need to get rid of in my 4 closets so I can go to the swap. Today, I didn't. Yesterday keeps picking on it.
Whoa, you know how to bring it home. I want everyone to know that you got your master's at Johns Hopkins Writing Seminar. You have been a Cave Canem Fellow and a Hurston Wright Foundation Fellow and have had grants from VCCA and the D.C. Commission on the Arts and the Humanities. Carolyn Joyner is her name. Mine is Grace Cavalieri. Now, tell us why it took 7 years, because it was so difficult.
It was very difficult, but the other thing was, you know how life happens, Grace. I got pulled off the project so much because I had to do a lot for my family. I had a lot of personal family obligations and responsibilities, and one thing led to another.
Is it ready, though? Are you ready?
I am ready. I'm ready to complete this and move on.
I'd like to know, when you were mentoring fledglings, poetry fledglings at DC Public Library, I must say thank you for your service as a volunteer. What did you find came into those rooms? What did you think about what you found there? Who came? What did they seem like? And what did they take away?
Mostly youth in the age category of 8 to 10.
Oh, I see.
And so these were students, and they all ages, but they varied, and they were young. Mostly I dealt with mostly the young ones.
How did you approach that?
Well, that's interesting. I got some Teaching Poetry to Youth books first. And I broke down big concepts, or helped them to understand what metaphor and simile and all those things were, onomatopoeia, all of that, by giving them examples and making sounds and telling jokes and allowing them to find in their personal experiences what would actually, how they could use those concepts to express what it was they were living at the time.
How did you like it? Did you enjoy it?
I did. I really did, because...
What made them come?
They were very excited about it. I think both community and... In some communities, they didn't have a lot of activities, literary activities like that going on. And in others, they did. Their parents did, and they brought them, and they were regular library goers and that kind of thing. So the group was very diverse in that sense, in terms of what they brought.
What did you learn about Carolyn Joyner?
Oh, you know what? To teach is to learn, and that I know, as hackneyed as that sounds, that is too true. You know how, because most of them, no matter what their backgrounds were, they were very verbal, and some of them just spoke to me in natural metaphors, you know. You know, like I've got a cloud in my pocket or something,
oh,
you know.
My.
You know, to say that I'm sad, you know, it's just...
Oh, that is terrific if you did that.
Yeah, so it was exciting because, and I was amazed at the ease with which they were able to express these things. You know, they talk about these things and then they sit down and they just write it. And I thought, I could never do this.
They're all from a star planet, Carolyn. They're all from another planet. Well, let's get back to your book.
Okay.
And I think everyone would like to hear some more poetry.
Okay, that's fine. This one is called Violet Fairy Wings. It's a little different style, which you'll hear. He loved dogs. I love the look he gave when he saw them. He would float free of time. I love to watch him float, cross over into their world of short legs, long heads, droopy ears, brawny shoulders. The wounded and neglected never get walked. Therapeutic dogs like Molly in his hospital room. It's been more than 5 years. More than 5 years since sun eyeballs moon, hands day off to dusk. I take my seat on the front porch stoop. Dogs appear. Seeing our dogs with violet fairy wings, standing up like men, happy, leaping into their shadows. They beam, don't bark. Wear his face.
You know, that's one of my favorites.
Is that right? Oh, that's good to
know.
Yes,
it's because of the last line.
Right.
Because of the last line.
Okay.
So unpredictable, so surprising. And that's what... Did you learn how to do that at Johns Hopkins Writing
Seminar?
Well,
you know, I think I learned by just reading a lot of other poets. And I really like William Archila's work. I guess Salvadoran poet. He's fabulous. And I got to meet him at the Folger one night, and I bought his book, and I have just... I love the poems in that book. It's just he knows how to, not only is his, you know, he's such a graphic writer, but he knows how to end a poem. And I just...
You know, Carolyn, you've said so much, which is so rich right now. Poets need to know, the young people I'm working with, you cannot write without reading.
Yes.
You should read a poem every day.
Exactly.
You cannot have more going out than is coming
Absolutely.
In.
Absolutely.
So I'm not surprised when you cite other
Exactly.
poets.
And but, I love reading other poets and just to see
it shows in your work.
Yeah.
Do you think that was a rough time? Those seminars they take no prisoners at Johns Hopkins.
No, they don't. They don't. And
you don't have any bad memories?
Well, I do have some.
But look what it did to you. We won't go into that.
But
it burned you pure. It burned you pure. Let's have another poem, Carolyn Joyner. We're at the Library of Congress virtually, but in our hearts, our consciousness is there. And I'm Grace Cavalieri.
Okay. This is entitled Today. Today marks the 10th month. In 8 days, he would have had a birthday. Gotta turn the corner, let go, they say. Time to adjust. He's gone home to glory. I stay calm. Don't tell them they offend. That their words don't console. Force me to unthink I could die from longing.
Carolyn Joyner. What is a crown sonnet?
You want to go to the crown sonnet? What I did, well, actually, I guess we need to explain what a crown of sonnets. And mine are called a crown of broken sonnets because there's one aspect of sonnets I didn't address. There are always requirements. If you write a sonnet, it's first of all must be 14 lines, and there's a certain rhythm called iambic pentameter that the lines need to be written in, and I pretty much observed that. The other thing is usually there's a prescribed rhyming pattern. I did not rhyme. And I like the idea of doing a crown of sonnets because it's usually addressed to a person, and these were called the Damon letters. So they were letters to my son. I was in conversation with him from my perspective, that is. And then poems that are address a certain theme. Each of the sonnets in a crown usually addresses some aspect of that theme. And I did tend to do that. And a lot of people object to form because they say that, you know, you're forced to write bad poems because you're stuffing them into this form. But see, with this, for me, it was it's emotionally exhausting to write this. And the form helped me to rein in my feelings.
Let me ask you a question. How did you conduct your theme throughout? I mean, how did you keep it floating? How did you first of all, how many sonnets did you do in this series?
There are 15, because 15 makes the crown. It makes it completely round.
Oh, so it must be 15.
Yeah, usually.
I see.
Now, sometimes they're shorter.
How long did it take you to write 15 crown sonnets?
I'd say a year and a half.
Uh-huh. I think people need to know this.
I mean, I found the form refreshing. I'm always fascinated by how form and meaning work together.
Did you write like one a day and then go a month and not write one?
I tried to write one a day, but of course I pitched some of those out and went back and redid. But because what happens, the thing that I didn't get to say is that the last line of the preceding sonnet must be the first line of the succeeding one, the one that follows it. Mm-hmm. And that's how you link the sonnets together and make the crown.
So if we look at each of these 15 sonnets, the last line of each one will be followed as the first line of the
first line of the next one.
Successive.
And it doesn't just mean you're just putting the first line there, repeating the last line. What it means is you're allowing that first line that you took from the last line to lead you into the next sonnet in terms of the story you're telling. So,
and you never felt repetitious. You never felt that you were stuck, and you felt a flow, and you were able to say fresh things.
Well, somehow I did over a period of time. Mm-hmm. I found that once again the form allowed it, opened my thoughts up, and I started to remember a lot of things, and somehow that last line really helped me. Making it the first line of the next sonnet helped me to tell the next story.
We better get that book out. I need people to demonstrate this. We have to get that in print very soon.
Yes,
you picked out two sonnets for us? Are they in the middle of your group, at the beginning? Or
they
what?
Are in the first third of the group of 15.
Does the series have a title?
Yes, it's called The Damon Letters, : A Crown of Broken Sonnets.
Let's hear it.
So, you know, it starts off, Dear Damon, and then all of the sonnets are really letters to him.
Mm.
So this is in the first part. This isn't the first one, but it's the first third of the 15. The Potomac, swell of its ridge, calling your name, forging questions hooked in my throat. Knotted twine I dared not let come undone. Tell me, when did you know you were dying? Did growing weaker perplex you? You seem puzzled even in hospice. I wanted it this way, hand-spun hope, practice head up, shoulders thrown back, unflinching face in the mirror. Worked hard to keep weeping, sorrowing faces from your bedside. Aunties with trembling voices were asked to step away. Only you had the right to cry. I need to hear your hushed voice speak. Did death tell you it would hold its greedy hand on your throat, choke your feeble cries? Did death tell you it would hold its greedy hand on your throat, or did it sneak in, surprise you? Did the voice inside your chest announce its coming? Were you asked to let go, walk away from yourself, or did you declare you were done? Just before dawn broke open, you left. Heart bucked and fluttered, soon collapsed. You folded in on yourself. There was a lingering, and then the unexpected. Your gaping mouth became a closed-lipped smile. Your face pulsed light as if a thousand candles were lit beneath.
Mm.
I'll never know what you saw upon your death. Could it have been Eliot using your glimmer to proclaim his song, In My End Is My Beginning?
Mm.
Now, those were two, and they were linked together. You saw how the last line of the preceding sonnet was the first of the succeeding. And it goes like that. So then the next sonnet would have to be, did Eliot use your glimmer to proclaim his song, In My End Is My Beginning? And, you know, you continue like that.
Oh, Carolyn, I think it's your best work. It's just so impressive. First of all, it's so elegant. To formalize something is to make it also so elegant. And those things are going to live longer than we are. Those are very important poems you've just read.
That's what I'm hoping. I was going for a kind of sensory subjective effect as opposed to historical cultural experience, of course. I wanted the reader to be able to meditate on feelings and circumstances and conditions and that kind of thing.
And the classical is so lyrical, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just it's just that you have given it another level, another dimension. So we have heard a taste of your traditional. We have heard some of your contemporary, some of your bluesy. Let us hear one more poem, and then we'll go to the final poem.
Well, you know what? I can do just a very short one called The Kiln. You know, in a kiln you make ceramic.
Yes. Let's hear it.
Okay. It's, we are heaven and earth, regenerate souls struggling within sacred palace fires. Transformation's kiln, whose flames rise beyond the universe, bring us into being again. And again, again.
Carolyn Joyner, you rock the world.
Oh my goodness.
You I'd rock like the to world, think so. And we will have a final poem.
The final poem is entitled Nothing But a Ragged Wound. It's after Natasha Trethewey. It's a pantoum, and we'll explain that. Like the moon that night, my son wanes into a likeness of his child's past self, as if returning to a place of new beginning where once he had begun. He wanes into a likeness of his child's past self. Soon earthly dreams will ink black as he returns to where he'd once begun, becomes the breath he will have lost. Soon earthly dreams will ink black. I wonder if he'll meet surprises upon his death as he becomes the breath he will have lost, closes his gate mouth to pose a smile. I wonder if he'll meet surprises upon his death when his face lights up, a tropical sun beneath, his gate mouth closes to pose a smile. A big air walks into my sorrow. When his face lights up, a tropical sun beneath, I begin to ride the red possession of regret. Beg for a big air to walk into my sorrow, erase memories of me trying to wash him from my womb. I begin to ride the red possession of regret for him having a father who never saw his good, me trying to wash him from my womb. I am lament's muted dirge. His father never saw his good. I retreat into the valley of the shadow, lament's muted dirge, my child's past self waning like the moon that night, my son.
The voice of Carolyn Joyner. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MAT Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Rivada Foundation of the Logan Family and the Sinipet Fund, with support from Maryland Humanities and the National Endowment for the Humanities. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Our engineer is Mike Turpin.